Following the government's integrated review of 2020, which recommended a more streamlined and agile military force, medical provision within the British Army is currently being transformed. It is doing this by reorganising the medical services structure as well as repurposing existing medical units. As such, now is an opportune moment to look back as well as forward as the Army refocuses against the backdrop of conflict in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and counter-terrorism more widely. This new series of podcasts takes as its theme the role of the field hospital as a staple of the medical organisation of the British Army over the past 100 years or more. In this and the episodes that follow, we hear from regular and reserve medical personnel and healthcare professionals about their roles and experiences working in the field hospital, and in the case of the reservists, about how their army roles influence their day-to-day jobs within the National Health Service. Currently, there are about 8,000 men and women in the medical services. Roughly half of these are regulars in the army, while the others work in civilian medicine and healthcare roles. We hear especially from serving personnel in 22 Field Hospital, based in Keogh Barracks in Surrey, and from 203 Welsh Field Hospital, based in Cardiff but with detachments across Wales. To understand the changes being made to the Field Hospital, we need to look back at how they first came to be and the role the Field Hospital played in treating battle casualties. We asked Rob McIntosh, curator at the Museum of Military Medicine, if he could set the scene.
The Army, as we know it today, dates back to the 1660 and around the English Civil War, that period, with the creation of the Standing Army. In the early days, there was no such medical system as such. There was just regimental medical officers, or surgeons as they called them, per regiment or artillery outfit, as it were, and the hospital which they operated in. There was something called a flying hospital or marching hospital. And then in Marlborough's campaign in the early 18th century, they became known as flying hospitals. They went along with the army, followed the army, and as it were, took casualties on, fixed them up as best they could then, and transported them back to fixed locations, wherever that may be. The field hospital, as we know it now, came into being during the Anglo-Boer War of 1899 to 1902. The RAMC, or the Royal Army Medical Corps, had just been formed in 1898, so it was all a new thing, as it were. It was premised on a regimental aid post, a bearer company, and then the field hospital. Casualties coming to the regimental aid post in the first instance, taken by members of the bearer company to the field hospital, and then further back to the main general hospitals. Now, the system didn't work. It fundamentally failed. And this led to a commission into the, not just only the medical services, but the whole British Army and its structure. And we then have the introduction of, from 1905 on, the clearing hospital, as it became known as. At these clearing hospitals, basic surgery was formed, and only emergency basic surgery was performed. And then the casualties, when ready to travel, would be moved on to a larger general hospital further back down the line. In 1915, the name was changed from the clearing hospital, because it really wasn't a hospital, and termed it a casualty clearing station, where basic operations, emergency operations, could be conducted, and when the patient was well enough, to be sent back down the line to general hospitals for further treatment. It was a vital part of the evacuation chain, a key fundamental part. There's a lot of experimental surgery occurred there. The CCSs, casualty clearing stations, often became specialized, i.e. for particular types of wounds, abdominal or head wounds, etc. They were situated close to a railhead or a major road junction to facilitate the injured going back down the line or coming in from the front line. The CCSs became quite large structures, as it were, and organizations, anything up to 2,000 beds. Some of them became specialized setups, as it were, catering for abdominal injuries or head injuries. They would have a staff of several hundred, which included female nurses, doctors, surgeons, and all the admin staff you would get with a hospital. But patients would generally stay there no more than 10 days before being moved on.
That was Rob McIntosh. During the First World War, there were various new techniques and innovations that were introduced to the casualty clearing station. Military historian Peter Starling takes up the story.
With the expansion of the casualty clearing station, it meant there were a whole load of new fields of employment for the men of the Royal Army Medical Corps. Not only the clinicians, the surgeons, the people carrying out the anaesthetics, but also with the advent of X-rays in the casualty clearing stations, we had to train soldiers of the Royal Army Medical Corps to become radiographers. As blood transfusion then was introduced in the First World War, laboratory technicians, blood transfusion orderlies, and also we found more and more male nurses were being used in these casualty clearing stations. So the REMC employments suddenly became a lot bigger.
Pete, could you tell me a little bit about the developments in the 1970s that led to the change from the casualty clearing station name through to field hospital?
At the time of the 1970s, there was really only one casualty clearing station, which was number 2 casualty clearing station based in Aldershot. They then decided to change the whole format of it to rename it the field hospital. The problem with that, we already had a number 2 field ambulance, so they changed its name to 2-2 field hospital, and it stayed based in Aldershot. But it was a cadre field hospital, so it wasn't permanently manned with scores of people. It just had a small cadre, and if it was required to mobilise and go off to war or to a humanitarian operation, such as the Jordanian Civil War, then it would call in its staff from the various military hospitals based all around the country. And they would then mobilise to Aldershot, draw their extra equipment, all their mobilisation medical equipment would be drawn, and they would disappear off to wherever they were required. Again, there was further redevelopment of the field hospital under what was called the Kirby Scales, and they then started looking at modules. So, for instance, they could deploy just 25 beds, or they could deploy 50 beds, up to 200 beds. So there was a lot of thinking about how this would be used in future operations.
Pete, can you tell us a little bit about the Kirby Scales?
The Kirby Scales are named after Major General Norman Kirby, an eminent military surgeon who, as a young captain, had parachuted into Suez in 1956 as a member of a surgical team. He was tasked in the 1970s to look at the reorganisation of field hospitals, how many beds they should have, how many surgical teams they should have, and to look at really all their overall equipment to make them a more efficient field organisation should they have to go to war. This was a radical change in the organisation of the field hospitals and really set the scene for many years to come.
So with these various reforms over the years, was the British Army a leader in terms of casualty treatment and evacuation?
Yes, I think the reorganisation in 1915 set the scene for the British Army to continue over the years for its reform of its medical services, especially its field medical treatment, and that continues today, as been seen in more recent operations, and the very high standard of medical care, especially surgical care, that's been provided by the British Army on campaign.
That was military historian Peter Starling explaining how the forerunners of the field hospital, the casualty clearing stations, offered a high standard of medical intervention and came to be reorganised in the 1970s. Within the Army Medical Services, medical provision is provided by regular and reserve forces. Prior to the future soldier reorganisation now taking effect, there were 6 medical regiments and 3 field hospitals staffed by regular medical personnel, whereas with the reserves, there were 12 field hospitals, a medical support regiment, and a casualty evacuation regiment. Major Sean Reeve of 2-2 Field Hospital tells us how field hospitals are organised when sent on deployment.
We have a number of options with us with a field hospital, and it's important to distinguish 2 points. First one is capability. So a capability is what the hospital can do. There are some predefined definitions agreed with NATO and our allied partners as to what a hospital will have in its capability. And this is reflected in the naming of the various different hospitals that are available to us. So our smallest hospital is known as a Role 2 forward surgical capability. And we go all the way through to a Role 3 for support hospital at its biggest. So that's the capability. In terms of capacity, which is the second consideration we need to think about, it's how much or how many patients or casualties that that facility can take. So two things to take in consideration with hospitals. It's the capability, what does it have, and the capacity, what can it take? If we contrast the capabilities that we have at our disposal, and all of these are found in both of the two regular field hospitals that the British Army has, we have a Role 2 forward that we've discussed. So it has one ED bed, one surgical table, one ITU bed, but no capability to hold general ward. And this has been seen on operations such as Op Newcombe recently in Mali, where it's deployed quite successfully. And at the other end of the scale, we'll have a Role 3 field hospital. We, as 2-2 field hospital, are mandated to hold at 30 days' notice to move. So that's the biggest one that we do at this particular time. So in this case, we have four ED beds, two surgical tables, eight ITU beds, and there is a reason for eight ITU beds, which is linked to our ability to take chemical, biological and radiological patients in. And then finally, 48 bed spaces in the general ward bed. So as you'll note, between the two capacities, one is a little bit more agile and manoeuvrable, whereas the larger Role 3 hospital, we would expect to be more fixed for a longer period of time. It's still manoeuvrable, but it takes in significant logistics to move it around the battlefield.
That was Major Sean Reeve, who described how the capability and organisation of individual field hospitals have influenced decisions around which one are deployed, depending on requirement. We've mentioned Future Soldier. This is set to change the role of the field hospital as significantly as the change away from the casualty clearing station in the 1970s. At its core, Future Soldier is about thinking differently about emerging threats in a changing world, how the Army deals with them, and the structures and equipment the Army needs. We will hear from Brigadier Phil de Ruffignac, the commander of the 2nd Medical Brigade, which owns the Army's field hospital capability. But first, we talked to Lieutenant Colonel John Greener, the commanding officer of 2-2 Field Hospital, who tells us how Future Soldier will impact his unit.
In the future, under Future Soldier, we transform into a multi-role medical regiment. That sees us taking on a medical squadron from another unit, which will then give us the capacity to deliver pre-hospital care and operating in a place in the battle space that up until now, we've never done that. We've only focused on deployed hospital care. So once I have a medical squadron, my hospital squadron will be split into two, and I'll have two parallel hospital squadrons. With those three deployable elements, I can provide a chain of healthcare from a point of injury in the forward areas all the way back to a hospital, operated on a hospital, packaged up for onward evacuation backwards back to the UK, most likely from that location. So it gives me a far broader spectrum of healthcare delivery and deployed space than I currently do at the moment as a field hospital.
By way of introduction, I'm Brigadier Phil de Ruffignac. I command the UK's 2nd Medical Brigade within the British Army, which owns all the UK's field hospital capability.
And can you tell us then a little bit more about the personnel as well? Does that mean that a multi-role medical regiment will have more personnel than a field hospital, or will there be more specialisms? How does that look?
So historically, I'll use the regular field hospital example in terms of how personnel might change. So regular field hospital has always been about 90 people strong, a very small skeleton staff that's heavily augmented by the time of deployment. A multi-role medical regiment has around 250 regular staff because of the medical squadrons doing the pre-hospital care that need to be incorporated. But you've still got the full range of specialties within the hospital, across the emergency departments, surgical teams, intensive care, and general ward and nursing beds. We also have all the other specialties that you'd find pre-hospital, dental services, mental health, environmental health technicians, and we also have specialist evacuation now as well.
Ukraine is obviously the first significant conflict in Europe since the end of World War II. How is the army responding to the potential in terms of its organization, of how it implements its medical care with that sort of element of nimbleness?
So I think what we've been able to do in the brigade is look at current conflicts, particularly the one in Ukraine at the moment, and adapt how we do our business. So the days of large, static, tented facilities being forward in the battle space are probably behind us. We're looking at increasing agility and mobility with smaller field hospital facilities, looking at mounting surgical teams on mobile platforms, but even going back to basics, hiding in plain sight, using buildings of opportunity, and just making sure that our soldiers have the mindset that's required for war fighting and not perhaps the larger scale peace support and coin operations that we used to do in Iraq and Afghanistan.
In this episode, we have seen how the field hospital came from the earlier casualty clearing station used during the First World War, itself a descendant of the flying hospital of the late 17th century. With these changes being introduced due to the Future Soldier Initiative, as described by John Greener and Brigadier Phil de Rufignac, the scope and capability of the UK Army's medical provision will change again, in that the move towards the multi-role medical regiment expands the capabilities of the former field hospitals with a focus on agility. In the next episode, we talk to the individual personnel at 22 Field Hospital and 203 Welsh Field Hospital to discover more about the structure and kinds of roles that go to make up the field hospital.